point in our process. That will be in Tillamook tomorrow evening. This is actually a subcommittee meeting on education budgets. That's all of the education budgets before the education committee, whether it's budgets that involve pre-K, early childhood education, K through 12, community colleges, higher education, or the Oregon Health Sciences University. If you are here to testify on an area other than education, I would actually ask you to turn in if you have any written testimony, but we will limit our testimony today to items that are before the Education Committee. Here with me today are a number of members, my entire committee actually, for the subcommittee. I'm Senator Richard Devlin. I'm the chair of the committee. To my left is Senator Evelle Gordley from Northeast and Southeast Portland. Also, Senator David Nelson from Pendleton, Senator Vicki Walker from Eugene, Senator Douglas Whitsitt from Klamath Falls, Representative Bob Jensen from Pendleton, Representative Steve March from Portland, and Representative Gene Wisnant from rural Deschutes County, actually from Tumalo. Or no, actually from rural Deschutes County. I'm missing up senators here. In addition to that, we also have here today Representative or Senator Betsy Johnson from Scappoose. A little bit later, we may be joined by Representative Jerry Crummell, if he has not arrived yet, and also Representative Greg McPherson. A little bit later, Representative Mary Nolan may also show up from Southwest Portland. I should mention Greg McPherson again. This is his home district here in Lake Oswego. We also have Senator Ben Westland from Tumalo. That's in Deschutes County, for those of you that don't know. And we also have a very special guest here, Senate President Peter Courtney from Salem-Keizer area. I'd like to also say at this time that these hearings are made possible both by Senator Peter Courtney and by the Speaker of the House, Karen Minnis. They have made it possible for this committee to tour around the state and other committees, both substantive committees and budget committees.
Jeff Krupp.
And Representative Jeff Krupp is here also. We may have a few other representatives and senators that join us later. If they will, I will announce them. I understand that Representative Mary Nolan may be in the audience. If she is, she's welcome to come up here, and we will get started. Rather than give you a long presentation on education budgets, which is not our purpose here tonight, our purpose is to hear from you, and we only have about 2.5 hours in which to do that, we will just take testimony. I will ask that members of the committee and other representatives and senators here refrain, unless absolutely necessary, asking any questions. And due to the number of people that have signed up, we have approximately 70, I'm going to have to limit testimony to 2 minutes per individual. As we get to a minute and a half at that point, my very able assistant here, Representative March, will raise the yellow card telling you that you have 30 seconds. And then at the end of that 30 seconds period, he'll raise the red card, which tells you that your time is up. If you do not stop at that particular time, I will try to, as courteously as I can, ask you to please close your testimony. We would ask, if at all possible, that you not, if you have extensive testimony, not read your testimony, but paraphrase your testimony. And with that, we will get started with some of the first people that we have signed up. I will start off with John Turchi, Tom Fahey, and Norma Jean Germon.
Let's see, how should we do this? Should we stand or it's...
Actually, if you will...
that work?
That right. Probably works, and if you others will sit adjacent to you. And I'll actually bring up the next three after you to just basically come in directly thereafter. Dr. Mary Lynn O'Brien, Francis Hefferman, and Rosemary, it looks like, Titor. Please proceed.
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, my name is John Turchi. I'm a Lake Oswego City Councilor. Other members of the City Council and the Mayor could not be here tonight because we actually have a City Council meeting going on as I speak. The residents of the City of Lake Oswego have consistently supported public education, both in our community and around the state. It is a strongly held belief in our community that excellent schools make strong communities, and that equally strong communities enhance the overall livability and economic viability of Oregon. While it is important to note that our residents have been generous in supporting a foundation and also supporting the local option, It's also important to know that the city of Lake Oswego has voted in favor of the income tax surcharge 2 years ago that was attempting to provide greater funding to public education. In a recent survey and in focus groups, our citizens place the health and quality of our schools as a top priority. Oregon has some natural advantages over other parts of the country to create jobs and economic growth. Those advantages are strong schools, beautiful and clean environment, an educated and skilled workforce, and good public infrastructure. It would be a mistake to continue to disinvest in these vital advantages. I am here to urge you to approve additional state support for schools and to continue to search for a fix to a current tax structure, a tax structure that in the end I believe is self-destructive. Funding public education is the place to start in order to reverse this trend and begin the Oregon comeback. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. German, please.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, and other distinguished members of the legislature, we're so glad you're here. My name is Norma Jean Germond, a member of the Portland Community College Board of Directors. I've been on the PCC board for 20 years and very much appreciate this opportunity to speak to you tonight on my behalf of my own district here. I want to take a couple of minutes to share with you the challenges that PCC is currently facing. The board's been meeting for months now to try to come to grips with yet another budget reduction from the state. We've been going through this for years now, ever since 2001. On Thursday this week, we have another meeting with our Citizens Budget Committee to hear more testimony on our proposed budget. Again this year, we'll have to cut faculty and staff positions, reduce programs, and raise tuition to balance out our budget. This is very painful for all of us because what we're doing is eliminating opportunities for students. The budget reductions that we've experienced for the past 4 years have directly and significantly affected Oregonians. Since 2001, community college enrollments have dropped by more than 75,000 students. In the same time frame, PCC has dropped 20,000 students from our classes. These are students who want job training and education so they can get to work, but who've been shut out because of tuition increases or program cuts. I first ran for the PCC board because I was excited about the possibilities and hope that community colleges offered our citizens. I'm worried now that we're shutting out opportunities for those students who need community colleges the most. And as you know, we realize the constraints that you have as the state and that you're facing. But we want you to realize how important, and I know you do, that community colleges are really the economic engines for Oregon. And you really understand that, I'm sure. Thank you very much for being here.
Thank you very much. Mr. Fahey.
Mr. Chair, members of the subcommittee and other legislators here tonight, welcome. My name is Tom Fahey. I'm also the proud parent of a Lake Ridge senior here, so on behalf of the Lake Ridge community, we'd like to welcome you all here this evening. But I'm also speaking to you tonight as Director of Human Resources for Siltronic Corporation, a silicon wafer manufacturer in Portland. And I'm also the president of the Portland Community College Foundation. So we'd like to thank you for this opportunity to tell you about my company's relationship with PCC and how vital the services of the college are to our business. Siltronic is a German-based company whose headquarters is here in Portland. We employ about 1,000 employees in the U.S., mostly here in Portland. The company was looking for a base in the United States here in 1978 and visited many cities in the U.S. to find a new home. We selected Portland for several reasons, but key among them was the quality of the public school system and the capacity for workforce training provided by PCC. Siltronic Corp., the city of Portland, and Portland Community College entered into a very unique partnership at that time. Our company, then known as Wacker Siltronic, supplied PCC with equipment for a training lab at PCC Southeast Center, which indeed was the genesis of that Southeast Center in Portland. Our company paid for PCC college instructors to go to Germany so that they could learn the silicon production process and bring that back here and become the trainers for those new employees. You have my testimony, so I'll cut straight to the chase here. We'd certainly like your support for Portland Community College. Our company especially is looking right now at possibly an expansion here in Portland. We're looking possibly to have the first 300-millimeter wafer manufacturing facility in this hemisphere. We're in competition with Singapore. We cannot compete with Singapore based on labor costs, but we certainly can based on education and training of this workforce here. So please, Oregon does not have many competitive advantages left in the world. Please continue to give your support to community colleges. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Now, Dr. Mary Lynn O'Brien, Francis Hefferman, and Rosemary Teeter. And also on deck will be Chris Hammond, Mike Rosen, and Tom Neff. Please proceed.
Good evening, Chair and members of the Ways and Means Committee. My name is Mary Lynn O'Brien. I'm a developmental pediatrician. I'm the past co-chair of Portland Stand for Children, and I'm the mother of three girls who went through the Lake Oswego school system and a grandmother of little ones who are soon to enter our public school system. I'd like to quickly debunk three myths about our schools. Number one, the recent rumors of the large reserve accounts are untrue, particularly in Clackamas County. The balance in Lake Oswego, West Lynn is only 6%, Tiger Tuolumne and 8%. That's low. We need to applaud our schools for smart budgeting. When they received less funding in 2004 and 5 due to the failure of Measure 30, although $5.2 billion was approved, they received only $4.9 billion. I can't imagine balancing my budget like that, and I'm sure you can't either. We need stable funding. Number two, the amount that we're asking for, $5.4 billion, is just sustaining what we have now. Mediocrity, not excellence. I know that you've heard many stories about what our classrooms look like, and you'll probably hear more tonight, and it's all true. $5.4 billion sustains schools at a substandard level. Number three, it's unconscionable to talk about tax breaks at a time of economic downturn and cutting schools and social services. The citizens of Oregon are not taxed heavily. We're taxed 46th out of 50 nationwide when you combine state and local taxes as a percentage of combined income. So to talk about tax breaks and cut schools is immoral. Lastly, as a developmental pediatrician, we have an increasing incidence in this state of autism. And you may not be aware, it's one in 166 in the country, but one out of every 66 boys who are born in the state of Oregon now qualifies under the diagnosis of autism spectrum disorder. If these children are diagnosed and treated early, we talk about cures. They'll be becoming self-sustaining citizens, so it's $200,000 versus $2 million. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Ms. Hefferman.
Chairman Devlin, members of the Ways and Means Committee, my name is Francie Heffernan. I am a member of Stand for Children. I'm testifying today on behalf of the little people in Oregon that cannot speak for themselves. My children are grown up, and I am representative of a senior citizen that does not have any children in the schools who has just paid a very large tax bill. I am very blessed to be able to pay that tax bill and happy to help fund our schools in a big way. I was very saddened this morning to read in the Oregonian that our state is recognized as average and our schools are slipping below average. How can we attract new businesses with that kind of a reputation? The article stated that we are having trouble with our K through 12 children meeting benchmark in reading. This is not hard to understand with all these funding difficulties. How do you explain to a first grader or second grader who's trying to learn to read and having difficulty that we're sorry, but you have an excessively large class and no classroom aid, but maybe in 2 years things will be better? Children have a very small window in their lives when it is time for them to learn these basic skills. And if they don't learn them, it is really, I think, unconscionable of us not to help them have that opportunity. In the last few years, I have been tutoring, mentoring, and a surrogate parent for a number of foster children. Every one of them has needed special education. Every one of them is in foster care as a result of drugs. We have a huge drug problem, and this is something that no one can control, and this affects our schools. Special education is expensive. This is a wild card that all the districts are dealing with, and it's certainly not the fault of the districts or the children. So anyway, please fund our children. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Audience, I would ask that you not clap after each speaker, the reason being that we only have about 2 minutes per speaker, and I have about 70 people to speak. And if we clap after each one, there may be some people on the last list that we don't get to. So I would please ask that you don't clap after each speaker, even though I might be just as supportive of the comments that are being made as anyone in the audience. Please proceed, Ms. Teeter.
Sign language.
Thank you, Chairman Devlin, members of the committee, and guests. My name is Rosemary Teeter. I have the honor of being interim president of the part-time teachers faculty association at Clackamas Community College. I'm also a former student. I live in Portland. We have two Wilsonville High School graduates in our household. Tonight I want to talk to you about people you know. They sit with you at dinner. They're in the row ahead of you or the row behind you at church. They attend high school with your kids or with your grandkids, play sports with them, middle-class kids, kids who leave high school. They don't leave because they're on drugs. They don't leave because they're pregnant. They don't leave because they're in trouble with the law. They leave because high school doesn't fit. Where do these kids go? What happens to them? It has been said that the middle class is the backbone of the United States and indeed of Oregon. If that's true, then Oregon and the United States have a very severe and progressive case of osteoporosis. Middle-class kids who don't finish high school do not stay middle-class economically, and their children face an even more bleak future. The loss of significant numbers of middle-class high school dropouts is partly staunched by community colleges. About half of high school dropouts are picked up by community colleges. They get their GEDs, they get a high school diploma, they go on to professional technical education or college degrees. Many of these go on and are able to contribute to their communities. Full funding for the community colleges returns significant bang for the buck in terms of productive middle-class citizens contributing to the economy. Just as Chip Sammons told you last week in his testimony, millions pumped into the economy through his business and continuing to happen. So we're asking for full funding.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Chris Hammond, Mike Rosen, and Tom Neff. And on deck, Sandy Jews, Doug Wicks, and Marge Gale. Please proceed.
Well, I'd like to offer a blanket of thank yous to everybody for allowing me to speak tonight. My name is Chris Hammond. I'm a graduate of Canby High School in Canby, Oregon. And when I graduated high school, I wasn't sure where I was going to go. I had a twin brother, and we both had dreams to attend college. My parents were above the line to receive financial grants for education, yet below the line to be able to pay for a university education for both of us. So I was in kind of a predicament. I decided to attend Clackamas Community College, and I have been grateful ever since. As a two-time national competitor for the school speech and debate team, as the Honor Society, Vice President of Service, and as a men's choir representative, I have learned the value of community colleges firsthand. And I'll tell you today that after traveling around the country and traveling around the state with the speech and debate team, as well as through experiences of my friends, community colleges are virtually unparalleled in the type of staff they have, the caring individuals their staff has, and in addition, their ability to be able to supply financial assistance to students. And this is key. This is very important. I have been blessed to receive scholarships from Clackamas Community College, and I've been blessed to receive tuition assistance as well. And now what we're dealing with here is if people like myself and people who are in worse financial situations than me, if they are stripped of that financial assistance, then where are they to go? You know, we've heard a lot tonight about, the middle class being the backbone. These people who attend community colleges are just looking for a way to progress their lives, looking for a way to get a better job. And that's the type of people that we are dealing with here. So I ask you to please, please consider community colleges firsthand. Thank you very much.
Good evening. My name is Mike Rosen, and I'm the parent of two children attending Portland Public Schools. First, I'd like to thank you for venturing deep into communities throughout the state to hear what many citizens have to say on these critical issues, and I want to thank you for your continued service to Oregonians. For the past 8 years, I've been actively involved in Portland Public Schools in a variety of capacities. I've regularly worked in my children's classrooms and participated in school events. I'm a former PTA president and site council president of my children's elementary school. However, over the past 8 years, I've seen classes grow to unmanageable sizes, programs cut every year, and that includes art, music, library, and computer sciences. We've lost critical services like counseling and on-site nursing. We've lost school days. And through all that, parents have continued to work frantically to raise money to attempt to hold back this flood of disinvestment in public education. Through all this, my family and myself and my community still highly value public education and continue to go to great lengths to support it. Public education has been and continues to be one of my highest priorities as a taxpayer. And while I'm a committed supporter of public education, I have not come here tonight to ask you to fund schools at the cost of basic services. I'm here to challenge you to set a base state budget that provides adequate funding for needed services to our elderly, medically needy, mentally ill, for child welfare programs, public safety, and public education. It's all about priorities, and my first priority is that you adequately fund all basic social services, public safety, and education. Here are some of my priorities and choices to raise revenues if you can raise taxes. No more tax breaks. Find ways to fund services, not continue to give money away. Reinstate the 10-cent per pack cigarette tax, and you can raise $70 million for the Oregon Health Plan. Raise the 70-year-old minimum corporate income tax to a sliding scale of $500 to $3,000.
Please conclude your statement.
Repeal unfair tax breaks. These alone can allow you to raise $400 million. So I'm here to tell you that the state's base budget needs to be raised to fund all services, and if you can't raise taxes to do it, you have a great deal of other options that, when pieced together, move us away from the false and unnecessary choices you're asking Oregon citizens to make. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Neff, please. And on deck, we have Sandy Jews, Doug Wicks, and Marge Gale.
My name is Tom Neff, 671 Merrillhurst Circle, West Lynn. Thank you very much for bringing this hearing to this area and for the opportunity to testify. I'm speaking as an individual who has had several years' experience with a community college. After 6 years on the West Lynn Council, I had the opportunity to take classes at Clackamas Community College. I took several to build up my computer and writing skills, and some to try and learn a second language. In addition, I took some art classes. All of my classes had a mixture of ages ranging from just out of high school to some older than I. Almost every student with whom I came in contact had clear career goals or were studying to strengthen their current job skills. As a matter of fact, just today, a girl who works in our office was really excited to tell me she was graduating this term and was headed to Portland State University as a business major. I have a 4-year degree from a very good university in California, and I found the instructional abilities and dedication is really important, of all my teachers to be equal to that I encountered at that university. At the very least, please do not make the cuts suggested in the governor's proposed budget. Again, thank you.
Thank you very much. Will the three parties come forward? Sandy Jews, Doug Wicks, and Marge Gale. And on deck will be Clarence Hine, Kathleen Nichols, and Teresa Robinson. Please proceed and identify yourself for the record.
I'm Doug Wicks. I'm a parent of a Portland Public Elementary School student.
I live 3216 Northeast 42nd in Portland. I want to thank you for coming here tonight and giving us this forum to speak to you and address our specific concerns. The first thing that I'd like to say is I think the overarching issue here is tax reform, the need for tax reform. Everyone has their individual needs and desires for what should be done with the budget, but we're fighting over a shrinking pie. I would suggest that the overarching issue here is tax reform, that citizens are paying too much, that balance has gotten out of whack. And all social services are suffering as a result. So regarding education, I haven't heard a plan that seems to suggest sufficient funding for education in the state of Oregon. The governor's plan is insufficient, and Speaker Minnis' plan seems insufficient and going the wrong direction in terms of trending down, bringing funding down over time. I'd urge you to support the minimum funding as the quality education model suggests. And finally, as it appears, as we proceed down this pathway that we are with education funding coming in increasingly out of parents' pockets, I would urge you to consider adding a tax credit for people who contribute to their children's education, much like we do for the arts or political contributions. It comes right off the bottom line. So if we're going towards user fees and parents paying out of pocket to supplement their children's educations, consider a tax credit. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Please proceed and identify yourself for the record.
My name is Kyrie Pauly, but I'm here reading a letter from Catherine Nichols, who had to go home sick. She's at 2133 Ridgewood Road in Lake Oswego, Oregon. She's got two students in the Lake Oswego District and is the treasurer of the newly formed Lake Oswego Special Education PTA. Okay, to paraphrase her letter, she says, "We have watched classroom sizes creep up steadily every year to about 27 to 28 in our elementary school. Any educational professional will tell you that these are unacceptable. Our elementary schools no longer have librarians. The parents volunteer to run the libraries. The elementary arts program is run entirely by parent volunteers. The computer labs are run by parent volunteers. And computer technology is woefully inadequate. Lake Oswego is one of the few school districts that still manually do state assessments, so the spring test results come out in the fall. Fees for most extracurricular activities, music, and sports have increased to a point where they're now unaffordable for most families, including Catherine's. Finally, in its efforts to preserve resources in the classroom, the district has pared administrative staff to a level that she, as an auditor, believes poses a material risk for public information, for a public institution. These cuts to the services, and especially the increases in class sizes, have been particularly hard for children like hers who are tagged in special ed. Her tagged child receives 15, that's talented and gifted, receives 15 minutes of enrichment each week, and her fourth grade daughter is dyslexic and struggles profoundly with reading, writing, and spelling, but the school district doesn't recognize dyslexia as a learning disability, so she doesn't qualify for special education. She says, as you consider the final trade-offs of state funding for all different programs and services, I hope you will recognize the critical and fundamental importance of our children and their schools and how much they've lost. And also, more importantly, she hopes that you reach out across the aisle to set up a dedicated source of revenue for schools. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Please identify yourself for the record.
My name is Teresa Robertson, and I'm the Associated Student Government President at Clackamas Community College. Chair Devlin and committee, thank you for allowing me to speak today. I'm a married student with three teenage children, and I came back to Clackamas after 15 years to finish my education. Community colleges were founded to provide higher education for all. I am a community college student, and because of that, I am able to share a student's perspective. Community colleges were founded to provide access for all, and without that, there's a lot of people that would not have access to higher education. As the education I've received at Clackamas, it will make me a better employee. The skills I have learned will help me when I enter the workforce, that I will be better trained than if I had not come back to school. Tough budget cuts have continued to widen the gap of those students who cannot attend school, college. Please keep community college education affordable, allowing access for all. I want the same opportunity for my three teenage children that will be entering college within the next 2 years, and for those future generation of students who need higher education. Community college is a starting point, and we need to provide that access, allowing people to get training through professional and technical programs that, in some cases, allow people to seek employment within 9 months of training. Oregon depends on what community colleges provide. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Please proceed. And identify yourself for the record. Please proceed.
Go ahead.
I have called three people prior. You may be you may be Mr. Hine.
I may indeed be Mr. Hine.
But I've called Sandy Jews and Marge Gale. This will be their second and final call. At this point, Mr. Hine, please proceed.
Thank you. Chair Devlin, I am Clarence Hine. I'm here representing the Portland State University Alumni Advocates. It's an advocacy group made up, obviously, of alumni and which supports Portland State University. Thank you very much for coming here this evening and for your past support, not only of Portland State, but of public education in general. I will comment very briefly on the advocates' budget priorities for higher ed. First, limited funds must be made available for instruction. As you know, Portland State University's enrollment has grown considerably in the past few years. We're up over 24,000 students now. And we urge you to continue that model of funding, which allows state funds to follow those students from institution to institution. It's very important at Portland State. Secondly, because access and excellence are two sides of the same coin, the advocates urge your support of the governor's plans for increasing financial aid and allowing universities to use tuition remission in order to bring highly talented students onto the campus. Third, I'd like to say something about faculty support. Obviously, excellent faculty are the key to an excellent institution, and we support faculty salary increases as a priority for higher ed funding. Finally, the governor has made investment in capital construction at our public institutions a priority, and focusing principally on deferred maintenance. The deferred maintenance problem is critical at our public institutions. It is a real challenge. It's difficult to raise public funds for our... Is that it? That is it. Thank you very much. I just wanted to say that those are the priorities for Portland State and for higher ed of Oregon in general. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Yes, ma'am. Please come to the mic and identify yourself for the record.
My name is Sandra Jose. I'm a parent of two children in Portland Public Schools, and I'm a member of the PTA at both of their schools. I'm not going to recount a litany of the losses that will result from the education budget proposed by both Republicans and Democrats. Both are unacceptable and fall disastrously short of the $7.1 billion needed to provide quality education for all the children of this state and as called for in the quality education model. Instead, I'm here to call on you to follow the dictates of our state constitution as outlined in Article 9, Section 2, which states that the Legislative Assembly shall provide for raising revenue sufficiently to defray the expenses of the state for each fiscal year. And also in Section 9, Article 6, I quote, whenever the expenses of any fiscal year shall exceed the income, the Legislative Assembly shall provide for levying a tax for the ensuing fiscal year sufficient with other sources of income to pay the deficiency as well as the estimated expense of the ensuing fiscal year. I am asking you that instead of creating an artificial and false conflict between schools and public health and safety, you do what you are mandated by the state constitution to do, and that is provide for sufficient revenue. There have been many sources of additional revenue suggested to you. Some of the most obvious include cigarette surcharges to help fund the Oregon Health Plan, which would also garner additional matching federal dollars, which we're currently losing, raising the corporate minimum tax rate, which are ridiculously outdated, and repeal unfair and regressive tax breaks in a number of areas. And I'm sure that you could come up with more. In addition, many in the Portland area have repeatedly demonstrated their willingness to tax themselves to pay for their schools. Just because measures 28 and 30 were defeated statewide doesn't mean that you should refuse to consider ways to put new revenue into our budget. Please do your job and do not pit schools against public services.
The audience would please refrain. The next three will be Darcy Tuggle Helper, David Ario, Eli Jimenez, and on deck will be Connie Azawa, Jim Morse, and John Belton. While they come forward, I'd like to notify everyone that we have reached our seven pages, which is we have 70 people signed up to testify, which is the maximum we can do in the time allotted here. People that arrive late can submit written testimony, either now or sending it directly to us. It will become the official part of the committee record on the Subcommittee on Education. Also, any written testimony that's received tonight will be distributed to the committee and is available to any member of the House or Senate that is currently here. Actually, even the members that are not here. Please proceed and identify yourself for the record.
I'm Darcy Tuggle Hepler, now Darcy Tuggle. Senator Devlin, members of the committee and guests, thank you for this opportunity. I was a stay-at-home mother for 4 years. I had nothing when my husband left. Community college has given me a chance for not only my future, but for my two little boys, Alexander, 4 years, and O'Reilly, 2 years. At 28, there isn't much out there. Community college has given me an economical alternative, personal help from my teachers, and opportunities to follow my dream of being a broadcast journalist. I have already achieved so much. Community college has also benefited my little family further because my father is also a part-time teacher at Clackamas. This income helps to support us. Again, thank you on behalf of my future and my children's future, who are your future.
Thank you. Please proceed and identify yourself for the record.
Yes, good evening. My name is David Arrow. I'm one of the founding principals of Fortis Construction, a general contractor here in the greater Portland area. And I'm here this evening to request your support for the budget line item of deferred maintenance and capital projects in the higher education and K-12 educational fields. Myself and my company are great examples of a solution. And we know what's facing us in the budget crisis. And I say an example as a part of the solution because we're a small company and we are providing jobs in the greater metropolitan area. Approximately 2 years ago, myself and my partners operated the state's third largest general contractor. And during our economic downturn, that general contractor pulled out of the state, and myself and my partners had to lay off 130 people. And instead of moving out of state, we chose to stay here and create another company and provide jobs for Oregonians and focus on the higher education and K-12 markets. So I propose myself as an example, as a part of the solution, and as a piece of revenue generation for the state. So I urge your support for deferred maintenance projects at all education facilities and for capital projects. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Mr. Jimenez.
Mr. Chair, members of the legislature, thank you for letting my voice be heard.
Please identify yourself.
I am Eli Jimenez, a student at Clackamas Community College. I've come to add my voice in support of the community college system where I have studied for some time. Five members of my family have gone on from PCC, CCC, and Mount Hood Community College to earn four-year degrees. My son James, and I say this with some pride, is chairman of the finance department for the state of New Mexico and Governor Bill Richardson's cabinet, a student at the community college system. I've come to speak in support of the community college system and in particular Clackamas Community College, where I am an honor student, and I mention that solely because, and to add support to the fine faculty that we have there. I've been in philosophy and the fine arts there. With the tuition increases, we have seen a dramatic reduction in the number of students at the community college. I've seen many of my fellow students drop out, or worse, I have seen them have to make painful decisions to consider their rent, their food, their clothing, drop out, and possibly try to continue. I ask that you continue your support for the community college system. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Could Ms. Ozawa, Mr. Morris, and Mr. Belton please come forward? And on deck, Rich Ackerman, Judith Putasi, and Denise Dewan. Please proceed and identify yourself for the record.
Thank you for the opportunity to speak tonight. My name is Connie Ozawa. I'm a resident of Lake Oswego and a tenured full professor at Portland in the NOHUD Toulon School of Urban Studies and Planning at Portland State University, where I have taught since 1994. I also serve on the American Association of University Professors bargaining team and have listened closely to the concerns of my colleagues. I come here to ask you simply to support adequate funding for higher education. In my 10 years at Portland State, I have witnessed an impressive student body and have appreciated the deep commitment of faculty and staff to providing high-quality education at this public institution. There are two aspects of adequate funding to which I hope you will pay close attention. I mentioned the first element only very briefly because I'm not an expert here. This is the issue of student financial aid. State assistance for students in greatest need is a critical component of a public university, one that my colleagues and I care deeply about and believe will be even more important in the near future than it has been in the past. I urge you to maintain funding for the Oregon Opportunity Grants. The second aspect of adequate funding for higher education I know more intimately. It is funding to address fair compensation for Portland State faculty. I'll get a bit personal here, but I'm confident that my stories are replicated and resonate across the PSU campus. PSU has been the fastest growing Oregon institution of higher learning and now boasts the highest number of students in the Oregon system. Enrollment at my own School of Urban Studies and Planning has increased 40% over the past 3 years. Many faculty have experienced a doubling of their of the number of students in their classes. Externally funded research has increased. Faculty are publishing, serving on national and international conferences and editorial panels. In my own master's in urban and regional planning program, applications have increased 170% in the past 5 years. This is from 100 applications to 170 applications. Significantly, two-thirds of these applications are from out of state. And what this reflects, I think, is the reputation of the institution. I believe that my program is no different from other programs at PSU, that we're increasingly attracting higher quality students. We're getting a good national reputation. However, PSU is on the brink. Faculty are dangerously underpaid. PSU faculties are 10 to 20% lower than our peer institutions across the country. What does this mean? It means that we're losing good junior faculty. It means that we're having trouble attracting new faculty. It means that our existing faculty are getting overworked and worn down. 78% of faculty are say that they're experiencing strong to extreme stress because of their salary situation. Just one final point about what can be done about this. Well, unlike other state employees, Portland State University faculty do not have a step system. There are two points of promotion in our whole tenure. I've been there 10 years. I've exhausted. I've gone from assistant to associate professor, from associate to full professor. There are no other possibilities for advancement in my career at Portland State. So I urge you, in closing, simply to support our public institutions, reinstate the governor's budget item on Oregon Opportunity Grants, and consider closely his proposal for retention and recruitment.
Thank you. Mr. Morris, please proceed.
Good evening. I'm Jim Morris. I'm a professor of electrical and computer engineering at Portland State and a Lake Oswego resident. Last week you heard from Sarah Bailey, one of our students, about the importance of her support from the Engineering, Technology and Industry Council. My purpose is to reinforce her testimony with a faculty viewpoint of ETIC. Our department has 640 majors at the moment, 17 faculty, and about $600,000 a year in externally funded research. This is the result of very rapid growth over the past 3 years when I served as department chair. For example, over that period, student credit hours more than doubled, leading, hopefully, to a similar doubling of the graduation rate in future, in the near future. And this is an ETIC goal, of course. But growth needs resources, and the resources to support this comes from ETIC. And, for example, 4 of the 17 faculty are currently supported by ETIC funding. New faculty recruitment, the startup packages that are necessary to attract new faculty come from ETIC funding. The building of new labs, for example, a new lab complex we've just put in, also comes from ETIC funding. One of the examples of those labs that you may have heard of is the IC Design and Test Lab, which has attracted $3 million from local industry in support, but that support is only attracted after the lab exists and can demonstrate its capabilities. So ETIC investment is effective. It leverages federal and industrial funding, and the enhancements to faculty quality that result have a direct impact on student experiences. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Mr. Belton, please identify yourself for the record.
My name is John Belton, and I'm here to support the full funding for the Extension Service through Oregon State University. This program is one area where you get a huge amount of leverage by the training of some qualified people who serve as volunteers within the broad spectrum of our state citizenry. My background is that I had 10 years of experience in 4-H when I lived in Canby, Oregon. I went on to receive degrees in biology, culminating in a PhD from Oregon State University. I taught for 23 years in a state university and came back retired and now manage 200 acres of forest land east of Sandy, Oregon. My training also included 85 hours of training as a master woodland manager, and that I have projected that training into over 600 hours of volunteer work for the Extension Service. I'm more than happy to do that because I know that it has an impact to the tree farmers and the people in the rural communities. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Belton. Rich Ackerman, Judith Potassi, and Denise Duong. Then on deck, Nicole Lamb, Dennis Elliott, and Sally Moncrief.
Please. Good evening.
Proceed and identify yourself for the record.
I'm Rich Ackerman, Chairman of the Lake Oswego School Board. Welcome to our school district, and thank you for taking on to the road and listening to the public. Real quickly, like every other district, we've had major reductions in our educational program. $3 million cut in 2002, 25 teachers, $5 million in 2003, 5 school days cut, extensive support and administration reductions, 10 teachers in 2004. And just last night, school board approved a $1.7 million reduction for next year, which will include 14 non-teaching positions and 12 teaching positions. Okay? You talk about ending balances. We've busted our tails to make sure that we have money by cutting things so that we have dollars to make it to the next year. and it's very important. I've gone out to the public now. We have a school foundation. We have a local option. But I'm tired of telling people in the public that no longer is there public education, only state-subsidized education, and that you'll have to end up helping pay part of the education yourself, of which a lot of people are doing. We have a very gracious community, but a lot of people cannot do that. And what I'm asking you all to do is to look to the future of our state, the kids that move on and that will be taking our positions, and fund the $5.4 million now and more in the future for public education. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Ackerman. Ms. Potosi?
Yes, hi. Members, Chairman Devlin, members of the Joint Ways and Means Committee, my name is Judith Putas. I'm a native Oregonian, Lake Oswego resident, and parent of two children in the Lake Oswego schools. I'm here to testify, actually, about two issues. The first is, please fund higher education adequately in this state. Oregon is simply failing to compete against peer institutions, in particular Washington State and California. For instance, at Washington State University in Vancouver, it will soon become the first and the only four-year undergraduate institution soon in southwestern Washington. So it will be a direct competitor with Portland State and other institutions in Oregon. Second, looking at Clark College in Vancouver, it is the second largest community college in the state of Washington. Last week, it opened a new student union building. It has a state-of-the-art library. It has 13,000 students and 7,000 full-time equivalent students. It is moving forward, whereas our institutions are not, so please fund them adequately. Another issue deals with faculty salaries. Last week I was told by a professor at the University of Oregon they had made an offer to a very qualified applicant for a faculty position. University of Oregon was able to make an offer that was less than $25,000 than offered by the University of Washington. They're wondering who that applicant will accept the offer from, and it's not difficult to see what's going to happen with that. So the second issue, I'm going to keep it really short. I had tried to testify last week at PCC, but you had very eloquent speakers. Please pass parity legislation this session for mental and physical conditions. It impacts students in our community. One in four families is impacted by mental illness. Last week I heard the appropriations by Oregon increased by 280% for the Department of Corrections and Public Safety. And it was now costing $55,000 per year to incarcerate a prisoner in Oregon's prisons. $55,000 is the same. It's the same amount that it would cost for one teacher's salary and benefits per year. So imagine 20% of prisoners now are mentally ill in Oregon's prisons. 2,000 more teachers in Oregon. Think about what that future will bring. So please pass parity and please fund higher education in the state. You. Thanks.
Thank you very much. Denise Dwan.
Thanks. I'm Denise Dwan, a resident of Clackamas County, and I appreciate the opportunity to speak to you this evening. Senator Devlin, committee members, I wish to address my hope that you will restore the funding levels to Oregon State University Extension Services. Through the training and resources of Oregon State Extension Service Master Gardener and 4-H Wildlife Steward programs, I have participated in a collaborative effort with Clackamas Community College Environmental Learning Center as a volunteer. My volunteer efforts in this school enrichment program focused on the growing need of urban children to understand environmental issues they and their future generations face. But with the reduction in school funding, environmental education is being lost despite the increasing need. by reaching youth in the classroom and through outdoor hands-on activities from 1999 to 2003, I provided OSU Extension research-based information to over 1,000 youth participants. Teaching of environmental stewardship through greater understanding of watershed water quality in native habitat enriches our youths and improves students' interest in science. My volunteer participation in this program has occurred at both Clackamas Community College Environmental Learning Center and two of the 8 wildlife steward habitat sites in the county. With total, the wildlife steward volunteers, school staff, and students have created more than 6,000 square feet of habitat on school property. Volunteers have also raised over $13,000 to help develop these school habitat sites. Self-reporting data from students, volunteers, and teachers have indicated the wildlife steward program is positively impacting students' interest and skills in science.
Please conclude.
Yes, thank you. Extension programs, agents, and volunteers provide their community with services that have a long history in Oregon. The state and the community I live in have a strong and effective extension program, and with the vision of changing needs and services required of its citizens, I hope you too have the envision to continue funding at the levels of 2001. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Please refrain from clapping. The next up, Nicole Lamb, Dennis Elliott, and Sally Moncrief. I probably have that wrong, but please proceed.
Good evening. My name is Nicole Lamb. I'm a single working mother. I work full-time for Regents Blue Cross Blue Shield of Oregon, and I live out in Wilsonville. It's a bit intimidating looking up at you this way. I'm here on behalf of my two children, Gabriel, who is 4, and Amelia Rose, who is 1.5, both who have a genetic condition called PKU, or phenylketonuria. I'm also here on behalf of the 900-plus individuals that utilize the CDRC clinics at OHSU each year. I'm here to voice a request that you not vote in support of cuts to OHSU and the necessary medical services that so many Oregonians receive. I moved here 2.5 years ago after visiting the state and knowing immediately that I wanted to establish roots and raise my children here. Before coming, I had researched the healthcare programs that managed genetic disorders and would provide the necessary services. Finding CDRC was the key factor in my decision to move to Oregon. If that CDRC had not been in place, moving here would not have been an option. I have been receiving services for my son at CDRC for the last 2.5 years, and when my daughter was born with the same condition, she became a patient as well. Ever since, like her brother, her condition has been effectively monitored, managed, and maintained by the competent staff at CDRC. As a result of the excellent care my children receive at CDRC, neither Gabriel nor Amelia show any sign of brain damage to date. They are developing beautifully. Ongoing professional management is essential, however, if they are to develop and thrive like other healthy children. Without it, they will suffer from brain damage and a host of other medical and emotional problems. When I learned that the clinics might be closed, I told my family that it felt like the floor was falling out from under me. The care these children need is so highly specialized that outside of OHSU, the necessary services are not available in Oregon. Our next conversation was about the fact that we might be forced to leave the state, something that I hope will not take place. Please vote not to cut essential medical services for so many families within Oregon. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Mr. Elliott.
Thank you. Dennis Elliott, thanks for coming into our community to hear from us today. We appreciate it. I am a Lake Oswego parent. I've had 4 kids go through the Lake Oswego school system. I'm also an attorney. I'm also the immediate past president of the Lake Oswego School District Foundation. In the environmental area, an indicator species is a plant or an animal that indicates whether the forest or ecosystem is healthy or in decline. In Oregon, as elsewhere, there's a clear indicator that measures the health of all systems we encounter. It measures and evaluates the health of our business community, our economy, our public sector, our healthcare systems, and our quality of life. That indicator is clear and simple. Do we provide a quality education for our children? Because if we don't, we are nothing more than a society in decline. If we don't, all systems suffer, because a quality education is, of course, systemic. It feeds and nourishes virtually every phase of our lives. The question then becomes, do we provide a quality education? Or instead, are we struggling with increased class sizes, decreased electives, and teacher layoffs? The answer, of course, is that we have placed our obligation to our children and our citizens to provide a quality education at significant risk. And this, unfortunately, places a greater and greater burden on the teachers and administrators that are left to carry out the task. So we urge you in the short term to provide the schools the resources they need, which is a funding level which does not result in teacher layoffs or teacher cuts. And we also urge you in the long term to join with the citizens of Oregon to provide adequate and stable funding, so that at some point the citizens of Oregon can point with pride to how we support our schools. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Ms. Monkey.
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, thank you for coming here and giving me the opportunity to testify before you tonight. My name is Sally Moncrief, and I'm a resident here of Lake Oswego. I'm a parent in the Lake Oswego School District. I'm here to support funding K-12 education at the level of $5.4 billion. I also support raising revenues to support that budget level. During the past 8 years that I've been volunteering in my son's schools, I've seen the same losses that others tonight have already noted. Class sizes increasing. Oregon now has the second largest class sizes in the nation. Librarians lost from elementary schools. PE and music classes drastically reduced. Curriculum purchase being extended out beyond the original dates. The districts have cut their budgets to the point that all that is left to cut is teachers and days. If the state K-12 education budget is less than $5.4 billion, our junior high and high school students will lose courses and their class sizes will increase. If the state K-12 education budget is less than $5.4 billion, our elementary school students will likely lose PE and music altogether, and their class sizes will increase. As parents and as citizens of Lake Oswego, we're doing our best to fill the gaps left by state budget cuts. We volunteer in the schools, we run and staff art education, we fund science curriculum, we purchase classroom materials and equipment. Here in Lake Oswego, we're lucky enough to be able to fundraise for classroom teachers through our education foundation. And we've also voted to tax ourselves to the maximum amount with our local option levy. We know and we appreciate strong schools, and we know how much they add to the livability of our community. Great public schools bring people here and energize our local economy. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Next up, Micah Stolowitz, Bill Korach, and Denise Frisbee. And on deck, Sandy Bell, Carolyn Heyman, and Deborah Lopardo. Mr. Korach, will you please proceed?
Thank you, Richard. My name is Bill Korach. I'm the superintendent of schools in the Lake Oswego School District. And I'm going to ask you and essentially make sure that you understand that you are making a decision that will have profound impact not only on the children of the state of Oregon, but if you vote an appropriation, education appropriation, that further deteriorates the services, the programs, and the offerings that we can provide for our children, it will have a profoundly negative impact now and in the future. And in 2 minutes, I'd just like to disenthrall you from a couple of notions. First of all, we definitely do not have the resources that we need to provide what we should be providing for our children. Second, we actually know what we're doing. We have 11 out of 13 schools that are rated exceptional. We have an outstanding school board. We have outstanding teachers that make heroic efforts in the classroom. They are producing outstanding results. I would maintain that the Lake Oswego School Board has a good grasp of finance, has a good grasp of strategy, and has a much better understanding of what's better for Lake Oswego than probably you do sitting at the state level. We do our part. We have downsized, we've restructured, we've reorganized, we've continued to find ways to do more with less. Our teachers have accepted and worked with us on contracts that have reduced benefits and have actually come up with an agreement to have minor, minimal salary increases to make sure that the whole equation works. Education is too important to be underfunded. It could never be the right choice. So I urge you, as John Kennedy said, things don't just happen. They are made to happen. We would ask you for the courage and the leadership to make the decisions that will make it happen for education, not just in our community, but throughout the state. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Mr. Stolwitz, and then Ms. President.
Thank you, Senator Devlin. I want to thank all of the committee members for your public service. We very much appreciate it. I'm just going to permit me a few seconds on a personal anecdote, and I'll move to the bigger picture. My kids started school about when Measure 5 kicked in the early 90s. As they went into elementary school, we saw cuts in art. We saw cuts in PE. We saw the counselor leave the elementary school. This was during the first 3 or 4 years of my older daughter's education. When the second one came along, my wife and I thought very hard, very carefully about the situation, and based in part on my wife's experience as a teacher and a counselor for decades, we had to look for an alternative. My younger daughter moved to a private school, and my older daughter continued all the way through the Portland Public Schools and graduated from Wilson High School. Unfortunately, I have to observe that the contrast between the private school and the public school situation was striking. And I won't go into details. I will say that in her last couple of years at Wilson High School, my older daughter experienced terrible overcrowding, cuts in programs, and garbage on the floors, and just in general a very unsatisfactory situation. We're hanging in there, and she's now at Oregon State University. I want to mention that my background is first as an electrical engineer and then currently as a patent attorney. And how does that play into all of this? Well, two ways. First, I'm active in recruiting and interviewing bright young attorneys from around the country. And young professionals are mobile these days, and they're looking at a lot of factors, and one of the first things they look at is education. I used to be able to look them in the eye and say, this is the place to come and raise your children. Now there's too much evidence to the contrary. That makes it difficult to bring the kind of people we want to have in Oregon to grow the economy. Secondly, I'm involved with a lot of high-tech companies. It's a similar situation. We want companies like you heard from Siltronic earlier. We want to locate high-tech companies here. We need the educational system. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Ms. Frisbee.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee and members of the legislature, my name is Denise Frisbee. I am here tonight as a candidate for membership on the Portland Community College Board, a strong supporter of public education at all levels, and a longtime advocate for stable and adequate funding for public schools. My direct experience with Portland Community College spans just the past few months when I decided to run for the board seat being vacated by Norma Jean Germond. I was appointed to serve on PCC's local budget committee, and I have been getting a quick lesson in community college funding and the issues that the budget cuts from the state have raised for the college. My concerns are really too many to go through in this two-minute time slot, but let me say that PCC has always been a great option for students. I know many students from Lake Oswego have attended PCC classes while still in high school to get a jump start on their college path. PCC has been providing some of the technical programs that our high schools have had to cut because of the continual reductions in K-12 funding. Many other students have taken the first 2 years of their college degree program at PCC before they move on to higher ed in Oregon. The community college is the only place for many high school students and older adults to go to get a first and even a second chance at higher education. These reductions are shutting the door for thousands of students. We are rapidly getting to a point where the public education system in Oregon, once one of the very best in the nation, is second rate. Classes in our K-12 schools are huge, programs are eliminated, and student needs are ignored. Our higher education and community colleges are priced out of reach for many Oregonians. Surely we can do better in this state. As a parent, community activist, and soon as a community college board member, I urge you to take whatever steps are in your power to stop the deterioration of our public school system, pre-kindergarten through graduate level. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Next up, Sandy Bell, Carolyn Heyman, and Deborah Lopardo. And on deck, Jen Patton, Judy Yumaki. Please proceed.
Senator Devlin and committee, thank you for joining our community this evening. My name is Sandy Bell. I'm here as a parent from the Oregon City School District. I also sit on the Oregon City School District Budget Committee and have for the last 3 years. I'm an active parent advocate and volunteer in the Oregon PTA and participate in their legislative committee. I have been on our budget committee in Oregon City, as I mentioned, for the last 4 years. During that time, we have had to decrease our budget significantly, resulting in 9 days lost of school. We didn't hire 30 teaching positions at one point. Our class sizes are reported to be between 25 and 30 K through 4, and up to 35 to 40 students, 5th and 6th grade levels. We have dramatically increasing class sizes. We also have felt the impact in terms of our achievement gap in Oregon City. We don't have the opportunity or potentially the will to raise the resources that communities like Lake Oswego and maybe some communities in Portland do. We don't have a foundation the size of Lake Oswego that helps fund music and PE and other programs that might be considered extra. In our community, we consider those basic education, and we encourage you to fund education at a basic level, including not only math and reading and science, but also music, PE, and the arts. It's vital to our education. It's vital to Oregon's future. I just wanted to make sure that you understood that it's not just Portland and Lake Oswego that's hurting, but we in Oregon City are also feeling the cuts. If we don't pass a budget at 5.4, our district stands to lose $5 million. It's important that you know that. It will result in even larger class sizes and cutting teaching positions. The achievement gap will widen. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Ms. Lopardo.
I'm Deborah Lopardo. I'm a Lake Oswego parent, Lake Oswego parent activist, and a candidate for school board. Thank you very much, Representative Devlin, Senator President Courtney, and the rest of you for traveling here and traveling around the state. I appreciate that. I hope I can come back and thank you again when the sessions are over. I hope you have listened and responded. Of course, my message is not new. I've been just saying some version of this for years as I've many times come to Salem. $5.4 billion, put kids first. Now, no one thinks you don't value children or education. We really don't. Yet every session, we have to come down there and beg and tell some of these very same stories over and over. It is incredibly discouraging. But maybe that's good that you're here, because this fabulous room has great acoustics, and maybe this time you'll hear us. Some people maybe laugh and look at amazement that Lake Oswego has funding issues. But we have so sick of taking away from our children, teachers, technology support, secretaries, electives. There are jobs in there that are lost and replaced every time we go through budgeting processes. And Lake Oswego does help itself. We're fortunate, but many other communities do this too. We have twice taxed ourselves with a local option. And of course, you've heard of our famous foundation. And on a state level, Lake Oswego parents joined other parents to come to you and say, all right, you've legislated lottery dollars for us. Let's take a look at that. And while you did make incremental changes, you didn't put children first. Although I heard those small business people testify, and I didn't want to take any of their incomes away either. It is a tough decision. But still we cut and still we raise money, but nothing can match what you can do with the state. You know that, of course. Now, someone in Salem recognizes that fundraising you offer is insufficient because we now have an accrual program where we can credit card our way from 1 year to the next. You're willing to let us gamble on a better economy, but you won't give us part of our lottery proceeds. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Ms. Heyman?
My name is Carolyn Heyman. I'm a Lake Oswego resident. Chair Devlin, respected committee members. My family and I moved to Oregon in 2002 after living in Singapore for 6 years. In Asian culture, education is the highest priority. They understand this obligation. If we will broaden our perspective and consider how other cultures would consider our current budget discussions, perhaps education will become our priority too. Singapore is a city-state of 4.2 million people with a GDP of $109 billion. Like Oregon, their economic and community development commissions look beyond their borders when developing plans for growth. But unlike Oregon, they directly link this success to what is happening in their schools. The Singapore Ministry of Education's 2004 directives include a primary curriculum that mandates English, their mother tongue, which would either be Chinese, Malay, or Tamil, civics and moral education, music, art, and PE, in addition to standard core classes, with staffing ratio of 1 to 25. By the time the students reach secondary school, they are additionally required to study geography and English literature, with options to study yet a third foreign language in classes with a staffing ratio of 1 to 19. A special 4-year bicultural studies program has been established to, in their words, nurture a core group of students with a bicultural orientation so that they can understand and engage China as well as relate to the West. Oregon's multinational corporations look to our education system to provide our students with the tools to compete, not just in the U.S., but also in the world economy. What leadership are we providing when our state's schools funding swells class sizes, forces districts to limit foreign language options, and leaves our students unable to locate Singapore on a map? Thank you.
Thank you very much. The next up is Jen Cratton and Judy Yamaki.
Been called a lot of things, but never Jen before. I'm Jer Pratton, superintendent of the Tigard Tualatin School District. Thank you for listening this evening. May I start?
Yes, please.
Thank you very much. I represent the Tigard Tualatin School District as superintendent, and I'm here to share some information with you and some data that I think you might find interesting. From 1995 to the year 2005 we are in now, that 10-year stretch of time, in the Tigard School District, we have grown 1,400 students. In that same period of time, in 1995, we had 622.1 FTE of teachers. Today, we have 622.7 FTE of teachers. To teach that additional 1,400 students we've gained in 10 years, we now have 0.6 of one teacher. That's a person about this tall. So if you see somebody walking around, you'll know which one we hired that is that tall in that period of 10 years. I'd also like to mention that state funding in 2001, we gained 7.3% state funding. In 2002, 9.2% minus. In 2003, plus 14%. In 2004, the state funding for schools went to minus 5%. I'd like to say that we've gained about a dollar each year out of $100. Over a period of 5 years, that is no way to run a business. If we're wondering about the swings in the economy and in terms of our funding issues and why we have ending fund balances such as we would do, you'd be a financial fool not to save some money back for that. By the way, I'd like to let you know that our ending fund balance is about 3.7% in our school district, a very responsible number, I might add. I'd also like to mention to you that our PERS costs this year are at $2.6 million more than they were last year. That's over and above what we were already paying. So looking at that situation, none of those dollars that we gained have gone to the classroom. Today we argued over teacher cuts in our big budget meeting. We are at 15 teachers we're having to cut, and no textbooks that we are adding. I implore you, at a very minimum of $5.4 billion as a budget for this state schools. And I think we need to begin to look for budgeting sources. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Dr. Pratton. For the record, you were signed up in two places, and where you signed yourself up, it's very clear that it's Jerry. Where someone else signs you up, it looks like Jen. Ms. Yamaki.
Chair Devlin, members of the committee, for the record, I am Judy Umaki, president of the League of Women Voters of Clackamas County. I live at 1421 Greentree Circle in Lake Oswego. The League of Women Voters is a grassroots, nonpartisan political organization which encourages the informed and active participation of citizens in government in order to build better communities statewide. The League strongly believes that it is the obligation of the legislature to sufficiently fund state services. These services include those that provide for the protection, safety, and education of all. We consider the education of our children at all levels to be a very important function of government from the local to the national level. These children are the business people, leaders, doctors, and parents of our future. We need to do whatever is necessary and pay whatever is necessary to accomplish this. Although the League has positions on many state issues, we are not here today to promote specific bills. Rather, we are here to ask that you follow through on your legislative responsibilities. If you as legislators think that services and programs are important, then they should be funded to the fullest extent necessary to reach your goals. We ask that you not pit senior citizens against schools or parks against police. It is your responsibility to provide for the well-being of all people in this state, of all ages, of all economic levels, and in all regions. We strongly urge you to look at all funding sources, including tax credits and increasing corporate taxes. It is critical that the 90 additional tax breaks introduced in this session not be added to all those already in existence. We believe that there are ways to raise revenue without borrowing more or increasing the income tax. We ask for the establishment of a reserve fund and the provision of stable funding for education and social services. We know that by working together for the good of all, this legislative body has the capability and the will to craft a budget that will provide fairly for all Oregonians. Thanks very much for this opportunity.
Thank you very much. Committee, I have three parties on the list here, but only one name. So would Todd Gifford, who is the dental school president, whoever is the medical school president, and whoever is the nursing school president, please come forward.
Student body presidents.
They're all student body presidents, of course. But I only had titles for the other two, not names. So please identify yourself for the record, and we'll get started.
Chair Devlin, members of the committee, my name is Todd Gifford. I'm the student body president of the dental school at OHSU. I want to thank you, first of all, for being here today. We have busy schedules, and we cannot get away for a lobby day, so it's good for us to be able to come before you. What I'd like to tell you today, because a lot of you have already heard me talk before, and you've gotten our letters, is that these students back here, that's the face of tomorrow's Oregon dentistry. And we came to OHSU because it was affordable, and we have servants' hearts, and we want to fix the access to care problem. I'm personally from Albany, Oregon, and I recognize Representative Kropp. You're in Lebanon, is that correct?
Close enough.
We are graduating after 8 years, long hours of studying, $200,000 in debt, buying a practice, $500,000 in debt before we see our first patient. With the governor's budget cut, we are facing a doubling of the tuition that we pay. We need you to continue to support us with restoring, as the House of Representatives has done, the $4.7 million back. We are so thankful for you doing that. We would ask the senators to join with the representatives in supporting the School of Dentistry at OHSU so that we can fully support Oregonians, so that we can fully address this access to care problem in the future. And I'd like to yield back the remainder of my time to my colleagues instead of parading them through to say thank you.
Thank you. Please proceed.
Thank you very much. My name is Zach Myers. I'm a third-year medical student. I'd first of all just like to thank all of you, each and every one of you, for your time here tonight and at all the other community meetings. Can't tell you how important that is as legislature is facing hard decisions to go out and face the folks who those decisions are going to impact. These are friends and families of your own. And so I thank you for your efforts. I acknowledge those, and I think they're very, very profound. I'd also like to thank all the people here tonight, students, families, in K through 12 as well as in higher education, for their support tonight. As you mentioned earlier, I'm actually the student body of all of OHSU's vice president. I'm a third-year med student, and my parents are both teachers. My mom is a kindergarten teacher, and my father is a high school teacher. I'd like to speak on one thing specifically, as a lot of other things have been covered, and that is the AHEC in medical school. This is an amazing opportunity that medical students have, as well as other students, nursing students, dental students, and the like. I spent February and March in John Day, Oregon. That was an area that made perhaps the most significant and profound impact upon me as a medical student, and is going to shape my future more than maybe any other impact, any other experience in medical school. It was out there that I was able to apply the things I had been yearning to apply, the things that I had come into med school to do. Those things include community service, teaching, and education, and a community leader standpoint. When you're in a rural community, you have those opportunities, and those are the things that AHEC supports and is based on. I appreciate all of you for your time and the continued effort here, and through these community meetings. I think they're very important. I'd like to thank everyone for their support tonight, including the K through 12 as well as the higher education folks, and encourage all of you to continue supporting education, because we're all in it together for the future of Oregon.
Thank you. Is there the student body president for the School of Nursing?
They were not able to make it tonight, but they did ask me to say thank you for restoring their budget.
Quite welcome. Next up will be Mike Rosen Llewellyn, Sandra Jernstedt, and Andrew Seedman. On deck will be Michael Lenzer, David Davis, and Laura Paxson. Proceed. Please identify yourself for the record.
Thank you. I appreciate the opportunity to testify. For the record, I am Sandra Jernstedt. I'm a resident of Lake Oswego, and I'm serving on the University of Oregon Alumni Board. And tonight, I'm here to urge you to support education K through graduate school, but specifically I urge your support of the University of Oregon capital construction priorities. For the College of Business, a $48 million project, the University of Oregon is seeking $24 million in general obligation bonds. The University of Oregon has already raised $11.2 million toward its $24 million match. The Gilbert Hall renovations at the Lundquist College of Business is a $6.6 million project. The U of O has already raised its entire private match of $3.3 million. The theater complex project is a $7.9 million project. The U of O has already raised, again, its entire private match of $3.9 million. For these projects, there are no debt service costs this biennium. These are public facilities at a public university. We must be able to count on the state to provide at least half the cost. Thank you very much for the opportunity to testify.
Thank you. Please proceed.
Well, I'd like to say that I'm both a little shocked and honored to be the first high school student who's testified here tonight. My name is Andrew Seidman, and I believe that I've had a relatively extraordinary public education here in Oregon. During my time at Lake Oswego High School right across town, I've been a member of two varsity sports teams. Currently, it's track season. In the fall, I played football. I've also been in one theater performance, taken two choir classes, one acting class, 5 years of Spanish, seven AP classes, and participated in three model political programs, including YMCA Youth and Government, where I had the opportunity to meet President Courtney. In addition to that, I was a member of the National Honor Society. I've been taught by energetic, enthusiastic teachers who've done a great job encouraging me to take advantage of these opportunities in my high school career, and to tell you the truth, I've responded to them well. And I believe myself to be a perfect example of the way Oregon education should work. Students should have these opportunities. And the truth is they're not going to. You look around at all the students in my school, and they see it coming. We sent over 100 letters to Senator Devlin and Representative McPherson just a few weeks ago from hundreds of students who wanted to tell them that they can see what's happening. The writing is on the wall. Just this past year, I wanted to apply for an AP European History class, but it's gone. It's not going to come back to Lake Oswego High School. In fact, more AP classes are going to be cut. Drama programs are going to be cut. Choir classes are going to be cut. The type of education that we all envision for our students, the type of education that I had, will no longer exist in the future. And if you think that for the children, even the little kids who have been screaming their heads off the whole time while we've been trying to have this testimony, if you think they're going to have the type of opportunities that I have, you're lying to yourself. It's up to you to ensure that the great opportunities with the great teachers that I've had exists on to the future. And without your help, Oregon public education will wither and die. Money inspires confidence in our schools, and it inspires achievement. We are wondering and we're hoping that you will respect that and you will show the same confidence in our school system. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Okay. Mr. Rosen Wellen? Please both come forward and identify yourselves. I may be a...
Okay, my name is Michael Lenzer. I'm from Lake Oswego High School. I've had the good fortune to experience one of the finer sides of an Oregon education. I'm ranked near the top of my class. I'm enrolled in AP classes, and I've been involved in numerous extracurricular activities. And most importantly to me, I've been able to build positive, lasting relationships with my teachers. We live in a community that's consistently supported its schools through the local option. We have a local foundation that's raised millions of dollars for education. But it's not enough. Lake Oswego has to cut its security staff. It's projected that we're going to lose 5 to 6 teachers for next year. And that's with the extra money from our community. As class sizes grow, it's going to be harder for students to connect with their teachers. I can't impress upon you enough how valuable that's been for me, having teachers that I can talk to as friends, as respected adults, as people who know more than me, and as confidants, people that I can go talk to when I have a problem. But as class sizes grow, that's not going to be available to students anymore. For Andrew Simon brought up AP Euro. It's a class that's been offered, but we can't staff our social studies department sufficiently to offer this class. I know that a lot of kids want to take this class. Kids sign up for it every year with little hope that it's going to be offered. The kids want to learn, but we don't have the money to let them. We live in an affluent community that values education, and we still don't have enough money. I can't imagine what's going to happen for all the other communities that aren't strong enough to support their schools, for all the other communities that don't have the means or the money to support their schools. I see how hard we're going to get hit with the extra money from our community, and I'm scared for us and for the rest of the schools in Oregon. Please give us the money that we need. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I apologize to Mr. Rosen, if there's a Mr. Rosen in the audience. There was a Rosen hyphen Llewellyn, and Llewellyn is actually the name of the school in the PTA. So please proceed and identify yourself for the record.
My name is David Davis. I'm here as a parent of 3 kids in the Lake Oswego School District. My son is here tonight reporting on these hearings for the Lake Ridge School newspaper. And I think that the thing he mentioned to me was the thing he's most passionate about is writing, creative, journalistic. He writes constantly inside school and outside school. And he came home the other day to say that if the budget isn't increased, one of the classes that will be eliminated will be creative writing. It won't exist anymore here at Lake Ridge. So I'm encouraging all of you to remember that these are the classes that keep our kids excited about school, keep them motivated, and end up sort of giving them the passion to pursue something later in life. So I hope you'll all, at this moment in time, a sort of critical juncture, step up to the plate, take a leadership position, make the hard choices, and stem the decline of education in Oregon. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Mr. Davis. Please identify yourself for the record.
I am Laura Paxson,
I am the parent of two Portland public school students, and I'm a teacher here at Lake Oswego High School. Good evening, committee. I have some information about what the life of a teacher is like in this district, and I'm so pleased that a number of people have been talking about the quality education model, and I had humbly put down just the $5.4 billion price tag, because that's the price tag that will have to be paid in order for there to be no cuts. And I have a little information about what those cuts would mean to me. They're talking about numbers. I teach six classes, four freshman classes of world history, with numbering 98 students in total right now, and two sections of AP juniors U.S. history, numbering 59 students, which makes a grand total of nearly 160 students. For a visual representation, I have brought my grade book without names and identification, so you can see it tells a story about teacher workload and about students. This grade book shows assignments and assignments not completed. Every blank, every EX for excused, or every zero is an example of a student who did not complete an assignment. And every one of these holes tells a story. This student is on an IEP and gets modifications. This student is chronically late. This student was on vacation. This student doesn't understand. This student doesn't care. This student was out all fall at rehab. Every single hole tells a story. No Child Left Behind mandates that I reach every child. My own ethics tell me I must attempt to reach every child. But with nearly 160 students, it becomes extremely difficult because they are not 160 interchangeable parts on a machine. They're not even 160 adults for whom some level of maturity and accountability can be held. They are 160 teenagers, every one of whom has a story to their life. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Final call for Mike Rosen. Mr. Rosen. Next up, David Mingle, April Blosser, and Paul Hartman. Please come forward and identify yourself for the record.
Good evening. My name is Dave Mingle. I'm a resident here in Lake Oswego. I'm also a parent of three school-aged children, one of which is autistic, an autistic boy. I hope you were as alarmed as I was to hear the statistic earlier tonight that one in 66 boys in Oregon can be classified as being on the autistic spectrum. My son's future, as with all kids in this state, depend on the quality of our schools. I also run a business that will soon celebrate its 20th year in business. It is a software company with 100 employees that pays an average of more than $60,000 per year, excluding benefits, which includes paid health care and a nice 401k matching program. In other words, my company provides very nice, well-paying jobs. Nearly 100% of my company's assets are tied directly to the creative and technical capabilities of my staff. Without quality K-12 and post-secondary schools, my business will not be able to rely on local talent. If I can't do that, that my business is at risk, and so are the jobs it provides. It's really as simple as that. Poor education will cost Oregon jobs. There is no doubt about that. The Quality Education Plan calls for $7.1 billion for K-12 education. The legislature is now fighting over numbers in the low to mid $5 billion range. I would urge you to keep the real funding gap in perspective. It is far bigger than what is being discussed. It is in the range of 20% or $1.5 billion to really provide the education that our kids deserve. The Oregon Business Plan, which I'm sure many of you have seen, outlines several recommendations for education. This plan should be taken seriously, not just for the quality of the recommendations, but also for the proactive offer it makes for businesses to get involved. I can also tell you that we as parents are here to help. My wife and I are highly involved in the special education program here in Lake Oswego. While painful at times, our experience is that when parents are proactively engaged, creative solutions can be found. But that will only get us so far. We are counting on you to make the tough decisions and find the money that our kids deserve for their schools. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Blosser.
Thank you, Senator Devlin. First off, my name is April Blosser. I'm with Clackamas County. I'm a parent of children at Head Start, and I'm also on Policy Council. I want to start off by reading something. I'll read everything. On January 10th, 2005, in his State of State address, Governor Kulongoski spoke about the importance of Oregon pre-K when he stated, "Nothing will put Oregon's economy into overdrive faster than a stable, well-funded, and accessible pre-K through 20 education system. This means that the state of education in Oregon will become, if it isn't already, the most important measure of the state of our state. And we make government more efficient and accountable, invest in our pre-K through 20 education system, fight meth and other dangers to our children, and build prosperity. In the Oregon Educational Act for the 21st Century, Revised Statutes 2001-329.153-2, it states that the Legislative Assembly finds that dollars invested in quality programs, such as the Head Start program after which OPK is modeled, return the cost thereof several times over in costs saved in remedial education, corrections, and human services. We at Oregon Head Start have consistently over 600 kids on our waiting list. Also, it states that since this was written into law, Oregon Pre-K has had huge budget cuts each year, and due to these cuts in 2004, less than 60% of eligible children were served, despite the fact that the law states that all eligible children will be served. I do have, over the scientific evidence supports the early childhood investment. Over the last decade, neuroscience has provided us with increasingly accurate information regarding human brain development. From birth to five, the brain is developing at an astounding rate. Electronic imaging defines consequences in brain development when children are neglected during critical developmental periods. Neuroscience and early childhood research studies supports the concept that the quality of a child's life and the ability of the child to contribute to society as an adult can be traced to the first 5 years of development. I urge you to support full funding for the Head Start program.
Thank you very much, Ms. Wilson. Mr. Hartman.
Senator Devlin and committee, my name is Paul Hartman. I am the vice chair for Clackamas County Head Start and also the volunteer facilitator for the male involvement program. And I know you have an awful lot of statistics, and you've heard an awful lot here tonight about children with autistic and a lot of other things. But the practical side of this is Head Start has proven itself that it works, and the No Child Left Behind, our kids do deserve an equal education opportunity here. And if our 3-year-olds and 4-year-olds could just continue getting the funding that they need to where their teachers and stuff, between the home visits and their classrooms, could identify the learning disabilities that these kids have before they get into grade school, that would save so much headache and later on. I mean, our technology is getting it so advanced that these kids, if they don't have the education that they need now, by the time that they do get into junior high and high school, they slip through the cracks, they're not going to be able to read, and they're going to be labeled as troublemakers and everything else, and it's going to cost the state a lot more money. So I would just like to say, let's really give not just for the poverty level or the low income, for all the 3 and 4 year olds for the state of Oregon, open the door for them, let them learn while they still want to learn, and teach them how to enjoy education instead of being told that they can't learn. So I just want to thank you for your time, and I do appreciate it.
Thank you very much. Next up, Jan Pierce, Sandy Flaskerud, and I cannot actually make out the first name, but Katsy Schmidt. Please identify yourself for the record and proceed.
I'm Jan Pierce, and welcome to all of you. Thank you for coming. I'm a longtime Lake Oswego resident, parent, and teacher. This evening I'm wearing a Band-Aid that says cuts hurt. As a first grade teacher, I know a lot about Band-Aids. Fortunately, over the years, my young students have been spared some of the overt cuts that have impacted the older students so that our class sizes could be kept relatively small in order to build a solid foundation in those early years. My kids are somewhat oblivious to what that's cost. My first graders don't know about the variety of foreign language classes that used to be offered at the high school, or shop class, or summer school, or swimming lessons. They don't even think about paying hundreds of dollars to participate in their school's sports. They don't realize that we used to have a certified librarian in each school to instruct students in how to use the library effectively. But they're starting to get an inkling of what these cuts mean. When last year's PE teacher came by for a visit recently and they asked him why he's not back, he had to explain that the district couldn't afford to give him a full-time job. And soon, when we start planning for next year and we face the possibility of losing a teacher on my team, questions will arise again, and so will class size. I wish I could find the Band-Aid that would help with the inner turmoil that teachers feel, stressing about enduring yet another round of budget cuts, wondering if there will be funds for a full school year, struggling over whether teaching in Oregon remains a viable career path, dealing with the pressure of reduced cuts, reduced support personnel, administrators, and resources, knowing that even indirect cuts made with the well-intentioned goal of directing resources to the classroom can have the direct impact of making a tough job more challenging. A remedy for these cuts requires more than a Band-Aid and a hug. It will take political will and courage and leadership. I urge each of you to rise above pitting schools against other crucial services and find a way to help our state fulfill its responsibility to its future. $5.4 billion should be the floor, not the ceiling. Thank you.
Thank you. Please proceed and identify yourself for the record.
I'm Sandy Flaskerud from Sandy. And thank you for listening to all of us here tonight. I think I should have signed up for two slots. I'm torn about which subject to talk about. I'm a retired teacher and a master gardener. I support and agree with all the testimony for more money for education and public services that you've heard tonight. And I would be willing to pay more taxes. Several years ago, I went to one of the state fairs, and there I encountered a master gardener. I enjoyed visiting with that person and hearing about the program, and I was hoping that sometime when I retired, I would be able to take that program and that it would still be around. In March, I graduated from that program, and I'm amazed at the breadth and depth of the program. There are a huge amount of dedicated volunteers. And just in the metro area, these volunteers work at the Pittick Mansion, the Rose Gardens, the Crystal Springs Rhododendrons Gardens, farmers markets, and fairs. The Master Gardener Program does not operate in the red. It does not break even. It pays for itself over and over and over. There's an old chestnut that I think applies here, both for the Extension Service, for public education, and for public services. Don't be a penny wise and a pound foolish. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hi, I'm Kathy Schmidt, and I'm a retired teacher and also a retired nursery owner and a proud member of the Master Gardener Program. Lots of us have been asking you for things, but I have something for you that won't cost you anything except a phone call. If you've ever wondered what that little green bug was that was crawling on your cabbage, or how come your clematis wasn't growing, or perhaps what's the best fertilizer to use, call the Master Gardener Hotline. That's part of the Extension, or OSU Extension Service Program that provides so much for so many people. I think that this is one program that is statewide that affects not only small children, but also adults. Canning, any kind of information that you need to know is available just by a phone call. And it's available because we've gotten the training, the good quality training, from support of our program, the OSU Extension Service. As a kindergarten teacher, I watched a master gardener come to our school and implement her program and her training with gardens. And I watched the kindergartners go out and get so excited when that first tulip pushed its way up through the top. And this is just the beginning, you know. It's just small children that learn. It's older people that get help. And the service is good. The training is good. And I'm hoping that you'll continue with supporting the Master Gardener Program and the OSU Extension Service at full capacity.
Thank you very much. Next up, Karen Davis, Diana Smith, and Paul Scherer.
I'm Diana Smith
from Sandy, Oregon, and I am also a master gardener and a retired teacher, and I can speak to all the issues that you've been addressed this evening, but I'm here to speak for the Master Gardener program. That I'm a new graduate and just starting to learn to give back to the community, and it's a very viable program, and I ask that the funding continue for that. Thank you.
Thank you. Please identify yourself for the record and proceed.
I'm Paul Shearer, resident of Lake Oswego, and I have children in Lake Oswego School District. I do support the higher level of funding for K through 12. I believe this is reasonable because the Oregon Commission for Quality Education also published a report saying we need a higher level of funding for quality education. I have worked in the high-tech industry here in Oregon for over 25 years, and I can tell you that when businesses consider locating within a state like Oregon, they look at the education offered all the way through kindergarten through graduate school. Not only do business people want their children to attend high-quality schools, but they also want to ensure that education is preparing people for new and future technical positions with advanced technology. Now, I'm proud to say in Lake Oswego, 10 years ago, the school district did create a technology plan. But unfortunately, because of our cuts to K-12 funding, Lake Oswego has not been able to implement that technology plan fully. We've had to cut librarians that were helping with technology. Then we cut the school technology specialists. Then we had to cut funding for computers and equipment. We asked the parents to pay for the equipment. And finally, this year, we've had to cut over 5 staff that were providing district technology support. So you can see that in the last 10 years locally, we've struggled to provide a technology plan. But if you look at what's happened throughout the world in the last 10 years, China has had double-digit growth of GDP. China has a technology plan. And other countries are increasingly being more competitive. So if we want to make our children competitive and have a competitive Oregon workforce that can apply advanced technologies to compete in a global economy, we need to fund our schools. A lack of education funding will impact Oregon's ability to keep competitive pace. So we must increase funding for K-12 education if we're going to be competitive. So please fund K-12 at the highest level possible. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Second call for Karen Davis. Karen Davis. Next up will be Dale Sherburn and Doris Witz, or Wirtz.
I come bearing gifts of money, Dale Sherburn. I would suggest that you stop funding the schools with lottery money and sin taxes and send it back to the local on property taxes, because those are the people who can afford it, and adopt a progressive income tax to support the schools. All the schools should be kept open, and you could find money in the Emergency Preparedness and Homeland Security Act. You should also be having a clinic in each school that would also be tied in with that and in cooperation with OHSU. If anyone wants to ask any questions about that, I found some of the sites that will get you the grants to do that. And also, I'd like you to direct the Director of Education for the state to investigate returning to K-8, which raises grades, lowers costs by eliminating a layer of administration, and it also increases the attendance and decreases the disciplinary problems and increases the retention rate of students in school. Philadelphia, Baltimore, New York City, Miami, and several states are thinking about going back to K-8 carte blanche. I'd like you to cut all the sports funding and just fund the regular education. The sports industry will come up with the funding to do that themselves if you cut all the sports, not just one. The sports industry will find a way to fund those sports. But in saying that, I'd like you to visualize this picture, that if you take a sports team, a group of them, tennis, baseball, football, and their coach there, and now you've got the other team over here and their co-coaches, let's call them the Bloods and the Crips, all right? You cut out the education where you have the opportunity for children to have that coach and that discipline, These guys over here are not going to stop recruiting, and they're good at recruiting, and they have a product that sells, and it's called easy money. No education required. All you got to do is stand on the street and cut your friends up. And I'd like you to think about that when you come to cutting school funds and what happens when you cut out the money and educational programs like coaches and athletics go away. We do need to fund a nurse in the school every day. We do need to have a physical education person there. And I think that we need to do one other thing, and that's to have a second language as sign language. It cuts across all of the languages, and all the kids can speak it if they're being taught from the beginning. And it's also very beneficial to them because they think in a different concept rather than in direct line. They think in concepts rather than direct line thinking.
Thank you. Ms. Wirtz.
Good evening, and thank you for being here in Lake Oswego. My name is Doris Wirtz, and I'm a teacher in the school district. I'm an English teacher. I teach sophomores. I've been here since 1993, and I just want to walk through a few changes in my classroom that perhaps you can see the repercussions from the budget cuts that we have suffered over the last 12 years. In 1993, I taught five classes of sophomore English, and it was 19 students per class. So if you just sort of round it off, it's approximately 100 students. At 19 students per class, that coincidentally is exactly what the National Educational Association recommends for writing classes. That gives one time to work with students individually on drafts, on thesis statements, on the pieces that it takes to become a fine writer. Now I'd like you to fast forward to 2005. Due to budget cuts and necessary changes in the system, I have six classes, and my classes are 28 apiece. This is close to 170 students. That's almost a 70% increase in students that I teach. You can well imagine what the changes are that a teacher of writing and literature and grammar and the English language has to do to accommodate that. That means less time with students. That means less one-on-one that can take place. That means more students fall through the cracks. That means cuts in lesson plans. Add to this the cut in staff, support staff, librarians, secretaries, those people that help me post my itinerary, my calendar on the web, that help me type the lesson plans, that help me type the exams. I used to spend 33 hours per assignment to evaluate papers, now for one set of papers. Now it's 58. And it's become almost humanly impossible to do that job and do it well. And I take a great deal of pride in my work, as do my colleagues in the English department. I implore you to please provide the leadership we need for education, fund at the bare minimum the $5.4 billion that we need. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Next up, Don Adams. It looks like Susan Van Orman and Chuck Toombs. Please identify yourself and proceed.
My name is Dawn Adams, and I live in West Lynn. And thank you, Mr. Devlin, and the members of the committee for the opportunity to speak in support of the OSU Extension programs. When I first came to Oregon about 9 years ago, I took the Master Gardener course, and it has made me part of the Oregon family. The course encourages water conservation, explains how one can grow produce for one's family, encourages volunteerism and community participation, and is a source of horticultural information for citizens based on accurate scientific research. Master Gardener chapters hold many events which raise funds for horticultural scholarships and various community-enhancing projects. In addition to attending chapter meetings and Master Gardener classes, I attend a weekly West Lynn Community Center garden group where I share my Master Gardener information. I also volunteer at clinics, at the telephone hotline, at the Extension office, and at the annual Spring Garden Fair in Canby.
In 2004, Master Gardeners gave 147,516 hours of volunteer service, which is the equivalent of 71 full-time extension staff, an in-kind value of $2,375,007. I and my fellow Master Gardeners are very proud of this record. We are asking that the legislature restore the approximately $12 million needed to bring the final budget to a total of $102 million in order to maintain the three programs that are so important for our state, the OSU Agricultural Experiment Station, the Forest Research Lab, and the Extension Service. These programs contribute greatly to the economy of the state and are popular with both rural and urban citizens. Thank you for the opportunity to share my concerns.
Thank you. Please proceed and identify yourself.
Yes, I'm Suzanne Van Orman, and I want to thank you, Senator Devlin, and members of the panel today for coming here and listening to us. I am currently the executive director of the Mid-Columbia Children's Council with the offices in Hood River. We serve the counties of Hood River, Wasco, and Jefferson, and on the Washington side, we serve Klickitat-Skamania County. I have a lot of experience. I've been in this job for about 21 years, and I have lived through benign neglect, explosive growth, and recession bordering on depression. We have Head Start, we have Early Head Start, we have the Oregon Pre-Kindergarten Program, and we have the Washington State Early Childhood Program. I'm also a founding mother of the Clackamas County Children's Commission, which is the grantee for the Head Start program. And I just returned from a week in Oxford in an early childhood panel roundtable. And I'm saying all of that because out of the experience of working on the 1987 legislation which created the Oregon Pre-Kindergarten Program, I want to say we got it right. I think of all of my experience in what other states are doing, this state is an exemplary program because it adopted the federal performance standards. We are providing comprehensive services. We are collaborating with our communities, and we are doing a very good job. The difficulty, of course, is that with states, you don't print money, and so when there isn't enough, we have to cut. So we've cut twice in the Dells. In Wasco County, Representative Dallum is our champion, and we defer to him to support our cause. But first and foremost, we are facing the same thing that everybody else is facing, just as you are, cuts, cuts. And how do we cut? Rising costs in health care. And we're a small nonprofit, and we're going to do everything we can to protect those services for the children and the families. They need it.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Mr. Toombs.
My name is Chuck Toombs. I'm a parent in Lake Oswego, and I just wanted to voice my concern that as we move forward on school funding, that we recognize that Lake Oswego itself, as a resident, has a unique problem in that our population is declining. We've lost 329 students since 1999, and as you can reflect, we are paid on our school based on our student population. And that's resulted in a tremendous revenue shortfall for us. In addition to that, because of our demographic profile, we get a lower percentage of the funding that's based on that number. So both things are working against us. And I would just encourage you to take a look at the actual funding, the way we are funded, to make it so it doesn't discriminate against cities like ours. Thank you.
Thank you. Next up, Martha Peck Andrew, Douglas Wicks, and Claire Francesi. Please proceed.
Senator Devlin and legislators, thank you for having me here tonight. I'm Claire Trancaise. I live in Southeast Portland, and I currently work at the Child Development and Rehabilitation Center at Oregon Health and Sciences University. I also am here representing the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees, AFSCME. I have a simple message to give to you tonight. I'm scared about the future of Oregon. If the proposed budget cuts go through for higher education and OHSU in particular, This is the frightening vision that I see for Oregon. It's the year 2009, and you're all back in the legislative session, and Oregon is not doing well. Many of your constituents who have the means are fleeing the state, and rural Oregon is in a healthcare crisis. Small physicians and dentist offices, as well as rural hospitals around the state, have closed. They have closed because they cannot find the dentists, physicians, or nurses that were trained within the state who are willing to work in them. Many of the families and individuals with special health care needs who used to receive their services at the Child Development and Rehabilitation Center are bankrupt or approaching it. And despite the money they spend on their care, the quality of their life continues to deteriorate because there's no one in their community to care for them. Emergency rooms are the new doctor's offices, and the state is unable to fix the damage that has been done. It's the year 2009, and you are all wishing that 4 years ago you had not made the mistake of cutting the OHSU budget and infrastructure that it supports throughout the state of Oregon. I urge you not to regret the decision you make in 2005 and restore full funding to CDRC and to OHSU. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Second call for Martha Peck Andrews and Douglas Wicks. Next up will be Jill Punches and Moira Tufts. And that will be a final call for Martha Peck Andrew and Douglas Wicks.
My name is Jill Punches, and I'm a parent with children at Richmond Elementary School in Portland. And I'm here today to say that I had the benefit of growing up next to the University of Michigan as a child, and appreciated having high standards with the people that lived around me. I've been an Oregonian for most of my tax-paying years and have been here many years. And I came here with high expectations and a vision that education should be accessible for everybody and at a much higher level than what we're seeing today. I'm pained every year that there are cuts. Nobody complains about the dead grass anymore. Nobody moans the loss of the custodians that used to know all the children and what to watch out for. Today I missed a PTA meeting that was important because they were talking about the cuts at our own school. Vicki Phillips' budget, I believe, is set with a state level of funding at 5.3, which is not at the House level of funding, and also at the governor's recommended funding level. And with that level of funding, she's projecting 281 cuts, if I'm not mistaken, for our school district. And even if you account for 2,000 students leaving, because we are facing an outflight of students, that's still 200 FTEs, if roughly speaking, that are just positions, warm bodies that don't know my children in schools. In my own school, we no longer have librarians. They're library aides, and she's going to be a part-time secretary. Our PE teacher will also be filling in for the principal when she's away for security purposes, and he will have other counseling duties because we're losing our counselor. Our kindergarten classes will be at 30. And since we're in the Japanese magnet program, that means those teachers are going to earn extra kudos from all those parents and all their grievances. They'll be very hard worked. So, thank you.
Thank you very much. Yes, will you please identify yourself for the record and proceed?
Thank you. For the record, my name is Moira Tufts. I'm a resident alien here in Lake Oswego. I don't have the ability or the privilege to vote, but I appreciate the privilege to speak to you guys today, and thank you for coming to Lake Oswego. I take my parenting duties, parenting responsibilities very seriously. I'm closely involved with Bryant School and the site council there, and I appreciate the fact that we have 14 intelligent heads here who I'm sure could put their heads together and think outside the box to come up with a solution for all kids today. I researched some bios. I researched some bios when I came up with when I wanted to speak here today, and I couldn't find everybody's schooling on the internet, but there were several people who had college education. I urge you to come up with a solution that will allow every child every opportunity. Don't deprive the child because of their zip code. Lake Oswego can afford, and Lake Oswego parents are willing to put money into the school district. Not every parent can do that. Sorry, my organizer isn't working right now. Being a mathematician, I rely on my notes. I would ask you not to deprive the high schoolers opportunities that will give them a better opportunity to make a decision for going to college. Everybody has an opportunity in kindergarten to go forward, but every high schooler should have that opportunity to make a choice to go into education, to go into higher education. And thank you for your time.
Thank you very much, Ms. Tufts and Ms. Punches. That concludes our testimony this evening. On behalf of your legislature, I'd like to thank everyone for coming this evening and testifying. I'd also like to thank the Senate President and the Senate Speaker for making this possible. The members of the House and Senate that are here that are not members of my subcommittee but are taking time from their busy schedule to be here. The members of my subcommittee that this morning heard 2 hours of testimony, and given the 70 people that testified here tonight, have heard from over 120 Oregonians today. With that, our hearing is concluded, and the next hearing for the full Ways and Means Committee is tomorrow night in Tillamook.